From the land of Grand University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 7th day of September 2016. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Arlen Suderman. He's at FC Stone. A bit later in the program, Gary Schnitke will be here to talk about some of the points he made during a webinar this morning. You can look it up right now on our website at willag.org, willag.org. And then as we close out our time together, we'll take up the weather forecast and we'll march around the world. The Southern Hemisphere in particular, as it gears up for its growing season. That with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Here are the numbers from Chicago on the 7th day of the month. September corn up 4 1/4, 3.21. December 4 3/4 higher at 3.33 1/4. September beans up 17 1/2 at $9.91 3/4. November 15 3/4 higher at $9.75 1/2. Soft red winter wheat in the July 3 cents higher at $4.46 1/2. The hard red at $4.48 1/2, 1 1/4 higher. Live cattle futures in the October up $2.40 at $102.42 1/2. The feeders in the September $2.67 1/2 higher at $133.17 1/2. And lean hogs in the October at $61.02 1/2 up $2.10. We're now joined by Arlen Suderman. He's at FC Stone out of Iowa. Thanks so much for being with us, Arlen.
My pleasure. Great to be here.
Actually, I think I put you in Iowa, but that's not where you're located. Are you in Kansas City still?
Kansas City, Missouri.
Excellent. Okay, so what we really need to know is why soybeans rallied today.
Well, it's demand. Demand is strong. It's been strong all along. We've seen a resurgence of Chinese buying over the last 2 months, particularly late July and into August, unseasonably so with Brazil basically sold out of soybeans, and so China coming here. And then as we look at the new crop year, those sales have been continued strong as well. With the size of the U.S. crop, that means that we're going to consume most of what we produce, assuming it's not a 52-bushel crop or something like that, but anything 50 or less is not going to leave us that big of stocks. And with Argentina shifting from corn to soybeans and wheat, from soybeans to corn and wheat, and Brazil basically flat on area this coming year, that means that we need to put some risk premium in case there would be a weather problem in South America.
How much follow-up do you think we'll have?
Well, I think as we get up in November up to the $10 area, we'll see an increase in farmer sales. And as we get up to closer to the 10-20 area, we'll see more technical sales by the specs. But if we break above the 10-20 area, then we start to change the chart formations. And I think we start bringing in more spec buying. And then we can start talking about some larger objectives in the 10-60, 10-70 area.
Well, you're talking about numbers that are still 25 and, 55 cents away. These are some pretty hefty numbers.
Yeah, absolutely. I think soybeans should be well supported. Now, of course, the key is coming down to what USDA says on Monday. If USDA surprises us with a 51 or 52 bushel crop, I think that will be sobering to the market. We'll probably see a sell-off back down again and rebuild the base. But I think the support underneath of this market is good until we have a better feel for the South American growing season, since area looks to be challenged out of South America this year.
And most of that has to do with changes politically there, is that correct?
Well, in Argentina, yes, going to the free market reform. So they were growing soybeans on roughly 62% of their ground. They're trying to get to better crop rotations now. So that means taking ground that was going to soybeans and putting it into corn and wheat. I think their soybean yields go up as they get into better rotations, but that still reduces production this next year. In Brazil, it's financially, that country is in the worst recession the last 100 years, and farmers simply don't have the money to put the crops out to expand like they would like to. And so that's why we see limited acreage increase, maybe anywhere from flat to up maybe as much as 1%, and we're looking at, with normal weather, maybe about a 101 million metric ton crop.
All well and good for soybean. Do you see corn being able to hold, or will soybeans continue to rally against corn?
Well, soybeans will be the leader. Corn will reluctantly go higher. Now, I do think that if USDA comes in with a 175 or smaller yield on Monday, the major funds will say, okay, the most bearish production news is behind us, and so therefore now we can focus on something else and take our profits on our short positions in the corn market. And we may see a little bit of a recovery bounce in corn as a result, and I think we're seeing some of that now in anticipation that USDA will not significantly raise their yield estimate and may actually lower it. But longer term, any type of significant rally is going to be sold. The farmer is the big long in this market. He's undersold, and the funds aren't likely to sustain any type of significant rally as long as the farmer's long the corn.
What are you suggesting farmers do, if anything?
Well, there's a lot of tools available to the farmer these days where he can lock in his floor or let go of the cash corn and still maintain some ownership. And particularly on soybeans, I think we need to keep that upside open. On corn, it's monitoring your local basis for strength. I think we're very vulnerable to basis weakness as we go into this harvest, particularly in central and western parts of the Midwest, where storage will be a real premium. So be studious as to local basis options, but be willing to sell rallies here as well.
What's your next article going to be about when you're working with FC Stone there?
Well, we're going to continue to focus on the impact that the major funds have on these grain markets and U.S. Fed policy going forward and how that impacts the dollar. We see a strong correlation. Correlations, you figure 1-to-1, if A goes up a certain amount, B goes the same amount. Well, when you look at money flow into some of the major commodity indices like the CRB index, it's a 0.88 versus the dollar, what's happening in the dollar. And then you compare that to money flow into corn, soybeans, and wheat, it's 0.72, with anything above 0.7 being significant. So Fed policy has a big impact on prices. And we figure it has an impact of pushing corn prices maybe even 50 cents above or below where the fundamentals would suggest they should be. And soybeans can be either a dollar above or below, just simply depending on the value of the dollar as driven by Fed policy.
The other thing that we probably ought to talk about for the day is usage. How has it been and what are your expectations, especially as we finish up this particular marketing year? Grain stocks reports due out the 30th day of this month.
Well, I think on the real story is going to be soybeans once again. When you look at how we finished the old crop export year and looking at crush and exports, I think we're going to be seeing the ending stocks for the old crop of soybeans, which is the beginning stocks for the new crop. Close to 200, I have them at 203 million bushels. So that's very tight. Old crop stocks speaks to the strength of demand that we're facing. On the corn side, I look for those old crop corn stocks probably to be in the neighborhood, very similar to where we are right now at 1.7 billion bushels. A lot of it comes down to what USDA does with feed usage. That's always a gamble on where they're going to come out. There's no real consistent pattern to what USDA does. On the new crop, I'm looking at ending stocks for corn of 2.7 billion bushels. So I'm fairly bearish of long-term fundamentals. When we look at overall usage, I think we're going to have a very active export program this fall, but then it starts to fall off for corn, but remains seasonally strong for soybeans.
What about the livestock sector? How's usage there?
Well, when we look at livestock, very disappointing usage, particularly for beef, as we're seeing the prices offered to the consumer at the retail level have not seen the same decline either at the grocery store or at restaurants that we've seen at the wholesale level. So the consumer's not had an opportunity to respond to the changing prices. Meanwhile, we see that total beef production has been up 7% over year-ago levels through the summer months, June, July, and August. So we have the increased beef on the market. When you look at overall pork production, expected to increase significantly here as we get into the end of the year. We're worried about potentially running into slaughter capacity. We're simply dumping a lot of meat onto the market, and the consumer is not benefiting from lower prices. in order to respond to those lower prices, increasing consumption. The strong dollar, although it's been weaker in recent days, the strong dollar is hurting our ability to export. So I had some real concerns about the demand being able to keep up with supply in the meat sector, and I think that's why we're seeing weakness on the board.
Any final word before I let you go for the afternoon?
Well, I guess longer term, if we're going to see any type of sustained strength in this market, it's going to have to be led by the soybean market. Will that happen? It comes down to the impact of weak La Nina on South America. Some of the early analog studies are showing dryness for Argentina, Central and Southern Brazil, but there's not a real heat indicator with that, so confidence is low.
All right. Hey, thanks so much, Arlen.
Thank you.
Arlen Suderman is with FC Stone. He, of course, is out of Kansas City, Missouri. Joins us on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. We're joined now by Gary Schnitke, agricultural economist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the U of I. Gary, in your latest effort posted today to the Farm Doc Daily website, you talk again about next year and what producers might consider. In fact, this morning in the webinar that you hosted, and for those who are looking for it, just visit the willag.org website. You'll see a summary of what happened there and a link to the webinar eventually once they put the video up of it. You suggested that producers really should consider more acres of soybeans next year than they have been planting in the past.
Yeah, if we look at previous profitability from 2013 to this year, soybeans in Illinois have been more profitable than corn. And a lot of the reason for that is that it occurs because corn cost increased much more than soybean cost during the 2006 to 2013 run-up in cost. Just to give you an example, back in 2000, corn cost minus soybean cost, or the difference was $67 per acre. It got up to $230 per acre, and now it's at $200 per acre. So we have to make up that difference.
So there's quite a little bit of difference that they need to make up at this point, and the way to do that is really to think about changing your rotation. Farmers won't be all that happy about that. Where do you start, though?
In particular, in Illinois, you look at corn on any farmland where it's corn after corn, and you have to question whether that's a good strategy, maybe switching that corn after corn farmland to soybeans. Again, that's because if we're looking at those differences, you have to have higher revenue. And just to give you a feel, if we use a $9 price for soybeans, we have to have a corn price above $3.88. Well, right now, for 2017, we're looking at a $9 soybean price, $3.50 corn price. So corn is still less profitable than soybeans.
You think you'll have many takers?
We'll see. But one of the things that also could change that is if costs come down for corn. And some of the costs that would have to come down would be like tillage passes, or those costs related to tillage passes.
So fuel.
Fuel and repairs and those type of things. The other one would be nitrogen fertilizer cost if they come down. And there's some pretty good evidence that they'll be lower in 2017. We're probably, right now, we're looking at a $500 anhydrous ammonia price per ton. That was $550 to $600 last year. So that helps. And the other one, seed cost. You know, seed cost would have to come down. So between those three costs, if they would come down, so instead of a $200 difference, we were looking at a $150 difference, that would make a lot of corn look more profitable.
Much to consider. Bottom line, though, is at this point, 2017 doesn't look to be a great income year.
No, it isn't. And so you have to look at those cropping decisions. And if you can make more money on soybeans than corn, I mean, it's those type of decisions are what keep us in business during those low income years.
Thanks, Gary.
You're welcome.
Gary Schnitke, agricultural economist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Wednesday afternoon. Drew Lerner is here from World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. World is the important part of this one today, I think, Drew. Let's take a quick tour across the growing regions, maybe outside of the United States. Where shall we start today?
Probably should take a look at Argentina. It looks like it has been drying down for quite a little while. Some of the wheat crop there is becoming stressed. About a week to 10 days ago, temperatures got up into the 80s and 90s for a few days. This past weekend, we had hard freezes occur across the region. Might have shocked a little bit of the crop. I don't think we did anything in the way of permanent damage, but it's just not a real pleasant environment right now. Most of western Argentina is very dry, and that could lead to some problems not only for the winter wheat crop, but also for planting of corn, even though that is still just a few weeks down the road. And in parts of China, we still have some very dry conditions prevailing in parts of the central sections of the country there. It's getting kind of late in the year to make a big issue out of this, but it's the very same area that was hit by a torrential flooding in early July, and now it's way too dry in that region. Crops that didn't get damaged or destroyed in July are now suffering quite a bit from the dryness.
Can I have you take a look at a couple of other places for me as well? In the southern hemisphere, I'd like to check in on the wheat crop in Australia, and then to see whether South Africa has recovered at all from the serious drought they suffered last year.
Yeah, the good questions. In southeastern Australia, we have a real problem with too much moisture. That's something that doesn't happen in Australia very often, but we do have it right now. Winter wheat, barley, and canola all suffering from too much moisture. It's still very early in the growing season there, so there's plenty of time for improvement. But if this pattern persists much longer, there will be some wet weather diseases and some funguses that will develop, and the crop will be under pressure. Also, the planting of spring crops in the southeast corner of Australia could also be delayed. In the South Africa corridor, certainly the situation there has been terribly stressful in the last couple of years with very poor rainfall and drought, pretty serious. So far, we haven't done a very good job in alleviating that situation. However, as we go into the spring season, when the rains usually start to return, we do expect to see an improving trend. The bottom line is that I think we'll have a better production year. If we can get La Nina to come around, which is probably pretty doubtful, but if we can get it to come in, we'll probably see much better rainfall across that country. But for right now, I think I would probably just kind of say it's going to be an average year. Better than last year, but not back to normal quite yet.
And as we close out our time, we should check in on the cooler weather that's coming our way here in the Midwest.
Certainly. There is cool air coming up next week. It will drop across the Midwest over a 2 or 3 day period. It'll be short-lived. But we'll see some low temperatures at night and probably the upper 40s and 50s across the Midwest, and afternoon temperatures probably in the 70s. It'll be very pleasant, lower humidity, and for a brief couple of days, we'll see no rain across the region. But just as soon as the rain abates from the region and the cool air comes in, we'll turn right around and start bringing it all back again. So it will be raining again by the end of next week.
That's Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City.